Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Event Industry News Podcast with me, James Dixon, wishing you all a very good morning, afternoon, or evening, whenever or wherever you tune in to today's podcast from. For context, as I often do on the recordings, because we tend to do these in advance and we record a batch of them, they go out. We're recording this fairly early on in January, Monday, January the 8th, to be precise. So a bit of context for anybody who's listening as this drops or indeed in the future. And a reminder that you can listen to all of our previous episodes via the eventindustrynews.com website or indeed wherever you get your podcasts from. On with today's episode. And for those who are listening to last week's episode, you'll have heard me mention the fact that we often have guests on where we're speaking about a very, very specific topic. And we're kind of going in a little bit of a different direction with some of these early episodes in 2024 with our guests, and talking maybe in a bit more of a general sense about what they do in the industry and really just seeing where some of these conversations evolve and flow to. And that's very much the case with my guest today. Joining me is the COO of Terrapin, Sharon Roosen, who joins the podcast as a first-time guest. Sharon, a very good morning, or a very good afternoon now, just after lunchtime here in the UK. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Thanks very much. Great to be here. From snowy London, actually, yeah.
Is it really? Well, I'm in the north of England, up in Yorkshire, and it is cold, but no snow yet. But you know, as is often the case in these provincial parts of the UK, we have our own microclimates, and you know, we could experience completely different weather to the rest of the country sometimes. But yes, a cold start to the year, but a busy start to the year for a lot of people who are working in the events industry. It's often a time, Sharon, where people will look at the year ahead, plan what they've got to do. There's a lot of planning, looking back a little bit at last year. But is it very much the case for you guys where you come back sort of after that little bit of a Christmas break and really sort of sit down and look at the calendars and start plotting out what you intend to do this year?
Yeah, well, that already started at the back end of the last year, I guess. But yeah, in fact, I was just commenting last week that I thought I'd have a nice run into the year and take January a bit easy, but already it's already off and kicking. So yeah, you had a great year last year, and looking to grow even more this year.
And as I said in the introductions, you're the COO of Terrapin. Before we sort of maybe get into the conversational side of things today, let's, if we can, just take a few seconds for you to explain who you are, what you do in the industry, maybe a little bit about your background leading up to this point and what Terrapin does.
Sure. I'll start with Terrapin. So Terrapin, we're a business-to-business events company. We do a mix of exhibitions, trade shows, large-scale ones. Our largest one, we have 40,000 registered attendees, about 500-600 exhibitors, and then down to events of around, probably our average events are now around between 1,000 and 4,000 attendees, and those tend to be quite heavily content based as well, so more of a convex model there. Sure. We're a global company, so offices in London, New York, Singapore, Dubai, and Australia. All sorts of different topics like many of the other organizers, but particularly in energy, telecoms, payments, education, and life science probably are our big areas, and transport, forgot transport. From my side, I have been at Terrapin for 30 years this year. This will be my 30th. Wow. I was thinking about this morning. 30 years I will have been in October this year at Terrapin. I've been around a long time, been here a long time. My background is really marketing. I started in the marketing department. Fell into the industry, I'm sure, as many, many do. You don't really graduate wanting to go into events, and certainly not 30 odd years ago when I did. I wanted to be in marketing. So then started in marketing, worked my way up, became the CMO. And then the COO, and then probably around 2014, I think it was, got the opportunity to go over to Singapore and to run our Asian business. So, you know, it's one part of marketing is that the one part in marketing that you can't influence is a product unless you're on the product side. And it's really hard to market a shit product. And it's really easy to market a really great one. And so, you know, if you want your marketing to get better, being able to influence the product more. So that then I moved into the management side, running our Asian business for 8 years. I just came back last year, back to the UK, and back into the COO role.
Wow. And what sort of a fascinating pathway, but also to have worked for an organization for that length of time, to really see the transition in how we operate and we deliver events in that period of time. Now, you know, I rewind just under 20 years to when I sort of stepped, I wouldn't necessarily say into the events industry, but into what I would call a career after a handful of jobs in my early 20s and working for a B2B publishing company doing trade magazines. And I remember when I first started there in 2005, there was a Rolodex and a sort of deck of contact cards on every desk. And there was one shared computer in the corner that if you wanted to email clients, you could basically like take a tick, you know, almost like the deli counter in the supermarket. Yep. You would add your name to the list and you would wait for it to become available, send your emails. And then you got to check them once a day to see if you got any responses. To think that for me was 20 years ago, how much we've shifted in that time. Do you ever allow yourself the luxury to maybe pause for a moment and look back and think, crikey, it's much better now or it's much better then?
Well, I think that I'll relate that mainly to marketing, I think, because I think marketing has changed more than anything in the events industry. Because, you know, going back to when I first started in events and, you know, we were, you know, same thing. You had to call up the mailing or the data bureau where your data was held and fax them the selection that you wanted them to do and then agree it. Then they'd send you back the Cheshire labels. Then you'd send them to the mailing house and you'd be doing your brochure and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, and then through the years, we had to learn about websites. We had to learn about email. Now it's social and digital advertising and AI is going to change it all again coming up. So, yeah, so much has changed. But the fundamental principles of whether it's marketing or events, to me, is exactly the same. You know, it's events, fundamentally, it's still about us bringing buyers and sellers together. We just do it a bit differently now. And same for marketing. It's still about understanding your target market and how you go out and get them and how you find them, where they live, where they hang out. So, you know, it's just the fundamentals are the same, but the way in which we do it is different. And I think that's probably the thing that's kept me interested so long, particularly in marketing, that we're constantly having to learn something new.
Change almost on a yearly basis, I guess partly because of the tools that we have available now for us to understand how successful our previous marketing campaigns have been. You know, I wouldn't say that there were no tools available when we were in a purely analog world, but I think it's fair to say that the digital tools that you have available to now from a marketing perspective arguably give us more insight into how successful things have been, which gives us more scope for analysis, but ultimately perhaps makes it even more work because you're constantly rethinking things.
And in the old days, you know, back in the days, my kids say to me, but I mean, you literally used to stand by the fax machine, right? And the fax would come in, the registration form would come in, and it'd have a scratch code on it. It'd tell you exactly how that person. And got you to the response to. Then where you're going to put more money into, was it how they first got to you, how was it you touched them in the middle, or was it the point at which you got them to register? So many in many ways that information makes the decision making process even harder about where to spend your money. But yeah, more exciting, more interesting.
And it has shifted. I mean, I'm constantly, you know, I've been fortunate enough to be involved in the production of Event Tech Live since its inception, since it was a small conference as part of the Event Technology Awards and then grew into its own entity and then has developed from there. And through that, have worked with a number of event tech providers. And in fact, the first podcast that recording that we did this year was on the subject of data, you know, and how we analyze data and really the amount of data that's being pushed into the event space now and is available within the event space. As COO now and having to have a handle on all of the aspects as well as the marketing, is the data issue an issue for you? do you have to constantly find ways of making sure that the data that you have available is actually translatable and that the people that are working within your team can understand all the data that's being generated?
We pulled all of our data together probably really early days of a lot of this, probably about 2008, around that time. We'd already started pulling all our systems together globally, so we actually, all of our data is already in one place, so we've got that part, and all of our systems feed in, and we're actually about to start changing how we hold that, but it's all in one place. So we've always had that in place. The biggest thing that we've been working on in the last few years is then really you use the word translate there, translating that for our staff internally to be able to interpret it and make decisions. You know, I've always used data to win any argument. So, you know, if you want to push something through, get the data, get the analysis to prove what you want. But now we can actually serve that up to our staff to have that in front of them all the time. So we've been, a lot of that is, you know, creating dashboards and being able to get that data really visible so that people can make decisions, you know, in real time on the fly, and they can have access to all that information rather than having to wait post-event to run all these reports and tell you what happened. You can actually see it all in real time. And that, when you're running an exhibition over a 15-month life cycle, that's, it's really important.
Yeah. How has it shaped the sales processes behind selling things like trade stands, trade booths, depending on which territory you're working in, the booths or stands and sponsorships? Has the data that you've got available now as a business helped the sales teams actually come up with more meaningful sort of pitches to clients based on what may have previously just been some headline data based on how many people walked through the door?
I think that's an area that we're going to be looking at a lot more over the course of the next 12 months. I still think that part is still waiting for historical data. So still working on last year's information rather than looking at what's going on in real time. But yeah, absolutely. We've got much better reports that we can look into who came last year and who did what, and help identify, the right audiences for the right people. Then I think that's great. But I still think that we're doing that on last year's data rather than doing it on more real-time type of data. I think that there's a big piece that we still need to do internally around that sales part of it. And to me, that data part for me is really that how we can help our clients. So that's how we're going to sell more. If we can demonstrate ROI to our sponsors and exhibitors, then that's going to help them in their marketing decisions. And in the same way as we were just discussing how they met clients and how they got them to the point of sale, same as us with our marketing. So to me, it's about being able to get that data to our clients in an easy, digestible way that hopefully will prove ROI to them.
Yeah. And when we talk about real-time data now, I've still not seen any examples where this is done superbly. I've seen some examples where people have kind of dipped their toe in the water with it, but even with things like heat map analysis now, real-time analytics on where people are moving within any given physical space. So if you take your classic sort of trade show floor example, the tools that we've got available through some of the event tech suppliers now of heat map data and seeing where people are moving to, if you then deploy that in a multi-day format, you can make subtle tweaks and changes, or even go round to certain exhibitors at a trade show and say, look, you had this amount of people walk past you yesterday. Did that equate to how many leads that you got, or scanned leads? Can you make changes? Does anything like that sort of manifest itself within Terrapin? We're using some of that sort of heat map data in a real-time basis.
We used it years and years ago. I mean, too early in the piece, to be honest. Tried it several times. I think the first time we tried putting beacons up was around about 2013. Too early. I mean, too early in the piece. And then we tried a few other times. We've not done it more recently since. But I do think as the shows get bigger and you've got a lot more people. So our one of our brands, Solar and Storage, now we're getting 20 to 40,000 registrations on these events. So there's a big piece in there. I think actually we need to look at it the other way around, because it's more important about driving people to those stands rather than post-event going, oh, you had these and you didn't get them. Or, you know, so I think we need to flick it the other way a little bit and work out how we can encourage people to go to the right places to help the visitor find what they want. On a big show with 600 exhibitors, you know, we've got to help the visitor be able to go and map their path rather than, and so that people are almost expecting them rather than post-event going, oh yeah, look, there's all these people walk by your stand and you only met this number, you know.
That's an interesting point that you raised there about, you know, we often use a technology to plan, you know, to help the exhibitors and the people who are spending money to sort of effect deliver the show, you know, that are funding it. And actually the technology there, is there a question to be asked? Have we used the technology as effectively to help shape the visitor experience and the sort of the movement and the planning of their experience at the event, which ultimately dictates how successful the people who are paying to be there have.
Yeah, I mean, I think we need to think a bit more like Amazon. I mean, we are a marketplace, right? Particularly on a big trade show with lots of products, you know, in lots of different storefronts, to use the Amazon analogy. So I think we've got to be thinking more about that and about how we can help people solve their problem when they come, and then they're going to go to the right people and then ultimately become customers of them, etc.
I've had a bit of a brainwave there, as I sometimes do when I'm having these conversations, and maybe it exists already, but we've all been on Amazon before where we've searched for a particular product, or been on a website where you search for something, and then obviously analytics, cookies, etc., algorithms maybe make suggestions of other stuff that we might be interested in that's of a similar nature. I don't know that I've seen an event app yet where somebody's used a smart badge, for example, to be scanned by a particular supplier at a show, a particular exhibitor, and then have the app suggest to them exhibitors of a similar nature that they may also like to visit, if that makes sense. You know, something as simple as that, where it identifies, right, you visited a supplier of this type of service or product. Maybe you might be interested in visiting these exhibitors as well, because they offer similar things. I guess it'd be something similar to do, but maybe people are shouting, listen to this, saying, we've already seen it. This is what we do. Do you get involved with the tech suppliers as such with that level of feedback that you use?
I mean, a lot of the apps do suggest that kind of thing. I think one of the problems we have with that kind of recommendation engine is that people only tend to go on the app just before the event, maybe even minutes before they enter the event, or maybe the day before. But that, you know, and as much as we tried, you know, particularly during COVID, talked a lot about building community and 365 events, all this kind of stuff, I think the reality is that that's not reality. So the problem is the data window is so small on learning about what people's problems is. I think we've got to be bringing in external data. I don't know how to do that, but you almost need to know what someone's problem is. You know, I mean, Amazon does, right? So, and all the advertising engines do. They're listening all the time at what you're talking about. You know, we just booked a skiing holiday, and then my son goes, oh, I'm being fed all this stuff about skiing holidays, you know, and he's had nothing to do with it. But obviously, you know,
Let's not fool ourselves. Yeah. They're listening, you know, they're paying attention one way or the other.
Right? I think we need to be ingesting that kind of information to be able to say, so we know that when a visitor registers for our event, this is why they're coming. This is what they've been looking for elsewhere, and then this is how we can help them on the event. So I think we need more data to really make that powerful.
How do you shape that registration process in terms of gaining the information that you need from the person registering to be able to give them a customized experience, if you will, but not making the registration process not offensive, but, you know, not wanting to deter people from that reg process?
That is always the conundrum, I think. And also the problem is, do you actually trust what people answer on a form? Most people pick the one that's in the first window, you know. So I don't agree with making registration forms too onerous. I think you'll lose people. Ultimately, we want people on the floor. doing it. I think we need to be overlaying other data sets so that we know more about them than maybe they know, and what they're looking for, and then can infer recommendations from that. So someone that can solve that problem would be great. I mean, that's what Facebook and LinkedIn, etc. They don't ask you loads of questions. They just, you know, from your activity, they will make assumptions on what you're going to be fed.
Absolutely. And it ties it back a little bit to what you mentioned about building these communities and that whole conversation that we had pretty immediately post-pandemic, really, about how do we retain some of the sort of the digital communities that we built during the pandemic when we were forced online. And that Reg question, I suppose, in some respects is answered by how well you maintain and manage your communities. So make the registration process simple, get them registered, get them in. You want the numbers, you want the bodies in there. But then is there a way of, you know, secondary, you know, third level, fourth level contact beyond that to maybe gather a little bit more information or get them engaging with some of your communities where you can maybe harness some of that information that those communities will generate for you?
I think a lot of it will be done through partnerships as well. And I think this is where AI will play a big role in the future of the industry, and how we can partner with different people within different sectors to learn more about the buyers that are out there and the sellers.
In terms of that subject, then AI, how significantly have you deployed it thus far?
I think this is the big thing, right, of now in all industries, not just ours. But I think AI. So I think there's several parts to AI, right? And obviously, the first part is how it's being embedded in technology we already use. So, you know, most technology providers are looking on how they can enhance their own product offering with AI. So then we're all ingesting that and taking that on board. So there are parts within that. I think there's a big piece around how we internally run our processes, our resourcing. And I think we've not done too much on that at the moment, but I think there is a big part on how that's going to play out in the future. I'm sure all of us would like to have AI be able to sell all of our exhibition stands for us, other than our salespeople. But I think there's a big piece that's going to come into play around that. We've put in lots of stuff. We've also been bolting on some AI stuff. So one thing we've done internally, is actually a relatively quick project, is we've got AI analyzing our NPS scores and all the comments that come in off of that. So we get an NPS score off every event that goes out automatically, and, you know, we live by it quite a lot. But then you get this massive big chunk of comments from people, which then you can go through manually and read them all. But now we've got actually ChatGPT actually sits behind all of that now, and it gives us a summary which can go up to the CEO and everyone else, and just give you a summary. This is what the people that liked it, these were the promoters, this is what they like about it, this is what people didn't like about it, and just summarizing that into a few bullet points. That's been really great to put that in. So that's one thing that we've done internally,
and that kind of also goes into the question of whether or not AI in certain respects is going to remove the need to have a person doing a particular job. I see something like that as it frees up time for that person to do stuff that's more productive, more meaningful than having to sift through hundreds of comments and come up with their own synopsis or gather all the, you know, harvest all the information that's within that. I think AI, if we use it correctly, won't necessarily take over people's jobs. It will actually allow us to be more productive in what we're doing and take up some of the sort of the more mundane tasks.
Totally agree that we should be looking, and that's what we're looking at. We're looking at how to streamline some of our accounting and finance processes so that we don't have to do a lot of that stuff. In marketing, a lot of the copywriting and campaign planning, there's software out there that you can just give them a brief and it'll come up with, you know, all your Facebook ads, all your LinkedIn ads and your email copy, etc. But someone's still got to do the right brief. Someone's still got to do all that. Someone's still got to place all that advertising and all of those emails, etc. So there's that part, and someone's still got to make sure it makes sense. There's lots of efficiencies that can come internally from AI. Sure.
As event tech, I suppose, over the last 10 to 15 years, has become a thing in its own right. You know, there never used to be an event tech sort of sector, so to speak, and there is very much now a sector of there. Has that also then reflected in the collaborative work you do as a business with certain suppliers and companies that you work with who are supplying elements for the shows and the events that you run? Is there a collaborative effort now with registration partners, with platform providers, that all fall under that tech umbrella?
Well, registration, we do it all ourselves. So we've built all of our own, all of that side of it ourselves. So we do all of that. So we try and keep our tech partner base relatively tight. So what we've always had a bit of philosophy to test out several. So event app is a good example. So we all use the same event app globally, although we are looking to maybe take on a second partner. And so that we can get efficiencies from doing that. So internally, everyone knows how to use it. We haven't got multi, learnings going on all over that, but also so we can get a really strong relationship with that partner, which means you can, you know, have influence on their roadmap, on what they're putting out there. And help them steer their product in the way that we want it to go as well. From that point of view, so
are you allowed to say who that is? You don't have to.
We've been with Swapcard since early COVID. We moved to Swapcard in early 2020, August 2020, I think. We moved to them, and then we've stayed with them. Very much embedded now with Swapcard.
Okay, and do you find not just with them, but across the board, because you're working in different territories that are far flung. We're talking all four corners of the globe. That things are more joined up now because of some of these tech platforms, or is there still very much an element where each territory has its own idiosyncrasies and you're having to, shows that you would run over in the Far East, for example, and events you run in the Far East are done in a slightly different way to the UK and then again in North America? Or do you find that globally now things are on a bit more of an even keel?
I'm a big believer that an event can be run pretty much the same way wherever you are. I mean, there are differences, particularly within language. So we will mold things to language. But a big part of what we do was to put everything on one platform, or on that everyone uses the same tech suite across the tech stack across all of our offices is the same. And there are a few nuances, but very much on the same type of thing. And an exhibition is an exhibition, a conference is a conference. It's pretty much run the same way. Language is the big definer. And other than in marketing, there are different channels you may use, but very much all joined up. So you could move offices in Terrapin and you'd get exactly the same tech stack.
Interesting. And we can, to a small extent by comparison, now relate to that with our own team at Event Industry News, because it's the same team that runs Event Tech Live. And we did our first Event Tech Live in North America in Las Vegas last year. And a lot of people, friends, family, when I was in the UK, I'm going over to Las Vegas and helping on, run a trade show over there on the production team. Oh, how glamorous and everything. An exhibition hall is an exhibition hall. And the actual schedule when you're there is no different to being at XL or the NEC. You wake up, hotel, go to venue in the dark, leave venue in the dark, and the inside of the venue is a big concrete warehouse to begin with, and is a big concrete warehouse when you end. It's interesting you said that, because I was thinking it would be sort of totally different in one respect, and then actually I got to the end of the time out there working on it and thought that didn't feel any different to working on any other trade show that I've worked on in the UK.
It's very much the same. There are slight differences, but and Terrapin, we've always been a big part of I don't like to use the word template because I think that has negative connotations, but we have a Terrapin best practice that we really try to get through the business, because, and that's another big part about technology, I guess, and communication now is we're very collaborative globally. So if someone has a good idea on an event in Vietnam, it could be on an event in New York next week. So, you know, whether that's, you know, actually physically at the show, or how we're selling it, or how we're marketing it. So we'll share that best practice, and we're always nuancing it. So, which is why I hate the word template. But yeah, we do have a set of guiding principles for our shows. And so you'll walk into, yeah, if you're working on one of our events, it would be pretty much very similar.
Mm. And that, that identity, I think, is important. You know, there are so many shows that I've walked into as a visitor before where, you know, they are pretty soulless, you know, in terms of how they're laid out, in terms of how it's presented to you. Has it been, again, looking at this sort of 30-year period that you've worked for the business, important that every show, even regardless of how big you've grown as a business, retains an identity where you feel like, yeah, this has got its own personality, this is very much our event?
Yeah, I think there is. I think there is. There's certain guiding principles that we do put across the board, and particularly when you've got a brand. So we might have a brand. We have brands. So the solar and storage brand that I was referring to earlier. You know, we're now rolling that out everywhere. But you can't have one of them look completely different to another, because often the sell side, that our exhibitors, are often common. They're going to all of them. So they also then have an expectation of what they're expecting from a Terrapin show, and they'll know that, you know, I know I get these bits and maybe I don't get those bits, or I have to do that bit a bit different. So I think that's important, from particularly as you're doing a global rollout of a brand, that you do have that. But of course, again, you know, clients, you know, will also accept that there are nuances as you go into places. You know, Wi-Fi is rubbish in some parts of the world, and yeah, as much as we can do about it, that we can't, you know, we can't often fix that problem.
Sure, yeah. Again, an interesting point, you know, that there are certain things that are just out of your control as an organizer. Do you have to sort of plan in advance to mitigate that, given that we rely so much on tech, not just to run events, but the visitors to those events will rely on it to keep in touch with their sort of day-to-day business activities. That they expect to be able to check emails, to do all the stuff that they do on their smartphone. How do you, or do you, mitigate that in advance? And does it come down to comms? You know, you don't want to say, please note the Wi-Fi is rubbish in this venue when you arrive. You certainly don't want to put that as a communication, but can you do anything to mitigate?
Yeah, I mean, you can put your own private networks in, just costs a fortune, right? So it depends on your show, and so that there are things you can do, and then that might be charging up to exhibitors. If they want to go onto that private network, they're going to charge more to get on it. But they're always, I mean, that's, I guess, the excitement and the nightmare of working on live events, right? There are always unexpected things that are going to happen, like, you know, one of our biggest shows last year in the desert, the aircon fails. You know, we can now plan for it because it's happened to us. But then, you know, you can't plan for every eventuality. You've just got to be very agile and be able to think on your feet and go and do something about it.
Dare I ask, what did you do?
Well, I actually flew in second day, so I wasn't there when it actually failed. But they brought in a massive amount of portable aircon units. It was a nightmare, but anyway.
Yeah, I mean, if there's one place where you don't want your air conditioning to fail, it is in a desert, in a desert climate. How does the sort of calendar year shape up for you now in terms of the role that you now have within Terrapin? Do you find, because you're taking an oversight of everything that's happening, are you... is your calendar more restrictive or less restrictive than it was when you were based out in the Far East?
We seem to have two big windows of events globally, and it seems to be the same in every part of the world. You know, from March to June is a busy period, and then from September to November, and everything, we seem to just squash everything into those, you know, those few months of the year. So from an events perspective and actually being at shows, that's the busy part of time. But now's a good time to be doing, you know, putting in new processes, new tech, you know, new ideas, trying to put new stuff in this early part, and then we get the summer, but then everyone's on holiday. So, that's the problem with events, is that there's always an event going on somewhere, pretty much. We do 80 events globally. So we've pretty much, you know, within those two big windows, every week there is handful of events going on somewhere in the world. So, yeah, it's busy all the time, really.
A non-stop process. And so yeah. If people want to just sort of with one eye on time and starting to wrap up today's episode, if people want to find out more about what you are up to, about the events that are within the portfolio, tell our listeners and our watchers where they can go.
Cool. Well, you can get me at LinkedIn. It's probably the best place to get me. So I'm Sharon Rusin on LinkedIn. Our website, terrapin.com. So all our events are listed up there. Also on LinkedIn, Terrapin on LinkedIn as well. So we put up quite a lot of stuff that we're doing there too as well. So, and there'll be a lot of stuff coming out. We're about to release a lot of our numbers from last year and what went on last year. So we grew our attendance last year by 50% globally. Wow. So quite a lot of stuff coming out around that as well shortly.
I mean, that's a significant stat to end today's podcast on, given that you run
maybe
80 shows over the course of the year. To grow by 50%, that's a lot of people.
Massive big jump in what we, you know, in the attendance. And we've got big plans for this year as well on how we want to grow those as well this year going forward. So yeah.
Well, maybe we'll be speaking this time next year again to talk about another 50% jump in attendance. Ooh. Given, and you can tell us a little bit about how you did that.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, love to.
Our guest today on the Event Industry News podcast has been Sharon Rusin. Sharon is the COO of Terrapin, and we've been talking about some of the events that they run, the tools, the marketing, the tech, and I suppose in a broader sense, giving us a picture and an idea about what they do as a business. As we said, head over to their website, check them out, find out a little bit more about them, and do connect with any of our guests that you're listening to on LinkedIn. I don't think we've ever had a guest on here who's not been quite happy for you to track them down on LinkedIn and make that connection and maybe continue the conversation beyond the confines of this little podcast that we put out once a week where we chat to people in the industry. Of course, we shouldn't wrap up without giving ourselves a little plug and a mention, as we always do. If you're listening to this on your podcast platform today, please do head over to eventindustrynews.com to check out the latest news, features, special supplements, all that good stuff that's on the Event Industry News website. And of course, the A to Z supplier directory. If you work in the events industry and you're looking for a supplier, a product, a particular service, the chances are you will find it listed within the A to Z supplier directory on eventindustrynews.com. On the website, you can also watch video versions of all of our podcasts. Of course, you may have started there today already and be watching the video version of this podcast today. If you have, thank you very much for tuning in and joining us. Please also remember to go to wherever you get your audio podcasts from, hit the subscribe button, and you will get each edition of the Event Industry News podcast as it drops each week. Which brings us to the end of this week's particular episode. My thanks once again to Sharon Rusin from Terrapin for joining us today. Sharon, best of luck with the rest of this year, with the rest of this week, in fact. Joining us on a Monday is always a commitment from our guests, the start of a busy week, especially just after Christmas. So thank you very much for your time today. We hope to chat with you again soon. And thanks to you all for tuning into the podcast. We'll see you on the next edition. Goodbye, everybody.
Thank you.